Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I'm Alex Chester, and with me, as always, is Akiva Wienerker. Akiva, today we are previewing the AFC West, and with it, the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos.
Well, you said a couple things that are already wrong. First of all, you said, with me as always. I feel like most of the time I'm with you.
Yeah, that's true. Not always.
And then you said, we are going to preview the AFC West. And I think just you were going to preview the AFC West.
Yeah, you're having some medical issues. Shockingly, South Florida is not the place to get the best sushi in the world. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, I feel like...
Your sushi is Zika infested?
Something like that. I feel like I've been to good kosher restaurants in South Florida, but also like the 20 worst kosher restaurants I've ever been to have been down here.
So basically, this intro is a race against the clock between your trips to the bathroom.
No, let's not be disgusting. First of all, that's not true.
Okay. All your lady fans are going to be turned off. We got to be careful.
No, this is I'm totally fine. I just can't be in the same place at the same time with you.
Yeah, so this is an interesting division. I just sent you my power rankings on the season, and I have the 9th, 10th, and 11th best teams on my power rankings all in this division. So this division is actually a little bit more up for grabs than one might think.
I didn't look at them yet, so I assume that the Chargers are the team not 9, 10, or 11?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
That is correct.
You know, every sports writer going to Oakland's training camp is coming away drooling. And I don't know. I don't trust the sports writers, certainly. People are saying that Reggie McKenzie has the toughest roster cuts in the league, that they have a lot of NFL caliber players that are not going to make the roster, which is good news if you have a bad team like the Jets. Maybe pick up some more NFL caliber players. You know, I don't know. Is this just like the Raiders West? It remains to be seen, but you were not...
Raiders West? What do you mean?
Like a Jaguars West. The Raiders East.
Oh, Jaguars Sorry. West. Well, no, the Raiders are much better than the Jaguars, though.
I don't know. Like, how good are the Raiders?
Well, let's put it this way. So far, every fan that we've had when we're going through schedule, pick winners and losers, every game against Jacksonville, whether it's at home or on the road, the other team has been picked to win. And these aren't the fans of their own team. These are fans of other teams making these picks. So nobody really is respecting the Jaguars, at least of our guests and listenership just yet.
But that makes sense. I think that that you need to see it from the Jaguars, whereas the Raiders have at least been edging a little bit closer to competency.
Yeah. Also, like, the Jaguars have good skill position guys, but other than that, they got a lot of holes, whereas the Raiders have a great defense. They have a great offensive line. All right, hold on. This is enough talk about the AFC West, because we'll talk about this for the next hour. Can we talk about the Olympics for a second?
Sure.
All right. So this is in your wheelhouse, obviously. So there's nothing that people like more than when Americans watch something for 5 minutes that they've never watched before and immediately come up with a bunch of rule fixes.
Oh, obviously. No question.
Yeah. Rule this fixes, is the Bill Simmons special.
I don't want to say I'm an expert, but I'm like very familiar with almost every Olympic sport, and I don't want to say I wrote the book on it, but I wrote like 93 printed pages.
Yeah.
For this Olympics. But like when I watch with people, all they do is correct me. People who do not even think of these sports couldn't have told you these sports were in the Olympics. Like it's amazing how everyone knows more than I do about every single sport in the Olympics. It's kind of crazy.
Here's one proposed fix I have, and I realize this is probably not the most novel thing in the world, but you know, a big problem of the Olympics is the fact that Michael Phelps, the reason that he has 21 gold medals is because when it comes to racing, we have one sport, which is how can you go the fastest from point A to point B? We don't have who can go the fastest running backwards and who can run the fastest going forwards and who can go the fastest crawling and who can go the fastest waving their arms like a butterfly. Yeah. But we do that in swimming. And so the problem is, like, to me, obviously, basketball is my favorite part of the Olympics. Basketball is the second most popular sport in the world other than soccer.
Can I get on the record, because this will come out well after this game happens? So the U.S. is playing Australia today. I'm going to say they're going to lose. And if they win, it'll be a very close game.
Okay.
That's a hot take. I'm going to say the U.S. is going to lose to Australia. And Patty Mills.
It's a hot take that by the time this is produced, will probably be frozen. Or maybe spicy hot. We'll see.
Well, you could take it out if they win by 40, but leave it in if they lose. But I really think.
Yeah, so I was saying, so soccer is the biggest sport in the world, and you have, the reason that the Olympics doesn't have to be that big is because you already have the World Cup in non-Olympic years. In basketball, which is the second biggest sport in the world, you don't have any large international competition that's really a big deal.
Well, you have the World Championship.
But nobody really cares about that. And
no, but we do send our best players to it.
Yeah, yeah, but like we care about the Olympics more than that, and even that we don't care about the basketball. My point is this: basketball should be the biggest part of the Olympics, and it's not. And the reason it's not is because there's no drama involved. There's no question about who's going to win, right? But the problem is because we only have one gold medal in basketball, which is for the best team. So why don't we also have a 3-point contest and have gold, silver, and bronze for that? And that's a
chance.
Yeah,
that would be pretty sweet. A gold medal in 3-point shootout, slam dunk
the
contest.
The dunk contest would be great. You have judges. Yeah. You have Russian judges with corruption, just like in gymnastics.
Sure.
You could have one-on-one, which would be great because then you have Americans playing each other. You have players from other countries also involved. You could have a 3-on-3 tournament. You could have horse. In fact, I just named 3-point contest, dunk contest, horse, 1-on-1, 3-on-3, and then 5-on-5 traditional. There you go. That's 6 medals right there you can have in basketball instead of one.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody who wouldn't watch a 1-on-1 tournament for a gold medal? That'd be incredible, right? That whole tournament, you have like a 16-player
No, it's good.
Bracket.
By 3-on-3 tournament came incredibly close to getting in the Olympics last time.
Are you being serious?
Yes, it almost made it.
Wait, actually?
Yes.
Who voted against this?
I'm not sure. A 3-on-3 tournament was very close. It wouldn't have been with the pros.
Oh, because I was going to say the other interesting wrinkle to me is that this should all be done, but you have to bring the same 12-man team.
Oh, cool. So you're like, instead of Harrison Barnes, you'd bring like some tomahawk dunker.
Yeah, so Zach LaVine, does he make the team?
Yeah, because Zach LaVine.
The U.S. can get away with a 12th man on the bench who can't play in the regular tournament because they're good enough and deep enough. But then obviously they already have Klay Thompson and a couple other guys who could be in the medal competition for threes. Mm-hmm. But then, and it's really not just Zach LaVine, because if the U.S. wants to sweep the medals 1, 2, 3, maybe they have to bring 3 dunkers on. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have guys who would never be in a dunk contest in the NBA, but because they're already at the Olympics, they're like, okay, I'll go ahead and do it. Maybe you'd see a Kobe or a LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
So other than, I guess, the fact that this means more medals for the U.S., and so I guess the world doesn't want to see the U.S. get more medals, who's against this? It would be incredible ratings. It'd be a way to make a sport that's not really that exciting become exciting.
I hear you. All right, let's hear what the fans have to say.
All right, fine. I just figured, you have some connections with people in the Olympic world, so maybe I'll pass along my message.
All right, I'll send it to all the zero people that I'm in contact with in the Olympic world.
All right, okay, fine. So on that note, let's turn to the AFC West. All right, Akiva. So let's bring in our guests that we have here to talk about the AFC West today. We are starting in the bottom of the standings based on last year, and that's surprisingly for us because I think both of us picked them to make the playoffs in the preseason last year, but that's the San Diego Chargers. And here to talk about the Chargers, we have David Drogemeier. David's the co-host of the Chargers Domination Podcast for SanDiegoSportsDomination.com. David, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Chargers and AFC West football.
All right, and then here to talk about the Raiders, we have Adam Brooks. Adam, welcome back. I think you helped us when we had our 32 Fans NFL Draft in April.
That is correct. Good times.
All right, and then we have Cole, frequent, at least 2 times you've been a guest before, I think. So this is a 3rd time's a charge for Cole, who's a Broncos hater. So he's probably – this is tough to watch last year, I imagine. From the last time we spoke was before the Chiefs-Patriots game, and from that point forward, things went downhill for you.
I enjoyed their previous Super Bowl game much more.
As do I.
I think we all did.
Let's jump to somebody who enjoyed the most recent Super Bowl more than any of us, probably. And that includes me, the Peyton Manning Bobo, who was very excited to see him win a second title. And that's Travis Henry. Travis is here to talk Broncos. Travis is a recovering journalist who now spends his time at Unleash and RockyRow.com. Travis, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. And just to be clear, I am not the Travis Henry that played for the Denver Broncos, which as a journalist, that was quite interesting when he came to town. But that's a story for a different day.
Yeah. As I recall, Travis Henry, the other one, the running back for the Broncos, he had like a bunch of kids and didn't he have some like child support issues? So I wouldn't be surprised if he was slumming it on my podcast these days.
But. I received a call early on from a lawyer who, and a grand jury had just indicted Mr. Henry for grand theft for stealing jewelry, and they continued to tell me the entire story, and I was just a reporter writing everything down, and I said, hey, you got the wrong Travis Henry, but thanks for a hell of a story, and then we ran with it. So.
All right, so there's some positives there. Travis, last year I asked the Broncos fan in the preseason, I'm not going to try and take credit and claim that I actually predicted, because I didn't predict it, but I did say to him, is it possible that we could see the Broncos win a Super Bowl behind their defense and Peyton Manning rides off into the sunset? And our Broncos fan said, I'd love to see it, but no, there's no chance of that happening. So
you had the wrong Broncos fan, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll get to predictions a little down the line. And obviously, look, nobody predicted that Peyton Manning would be pretty much the worst quarterback in the league and they'd win anyways. But we will get to that. So let's take a look at these teams coming into 2016. There's a couple teams in this division who I think are on the way up and a couple teams who maybe are not. So we'll get to that. But let's start at the bottom from last year again. That's David, we're coming back to you. So the Chargers really, you know, really bottomed out last year in every single way, including the fact that that last game of the year, I'm sure, might have been emotional for you as well, as it obviously was for Philip Rivers and a lot of the players. Antonio Gates, it looked like it might be their last game in San Diego. So the one positive you have to hang your hat on is the fact that the team is back at least for a year. I heard today, actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard today that the ballot initiative for financing for the stadium, instead of needing a majority, it's going to need a simple majority. It's going to need a two-thirds majority. Is that correct?
They're still deliberating on that. The lawyer for the city of San Diego had requested that the California Supreme Court rule expedite their ruling on that. So that's still up in the air. It could be two-thirds. The Chargers are preparing for it to be two-thirds, but it could very well be a simple majority.
Yeah, and if it's two-thirds, I can't imagine that's going to pass. So that would be bad news for those who want to see a new stadium there, and you know, good news for those, I guess, who aren't in support of public financing for stadiums. But we'll get that's a topic for another day. But so let's start on offense for this team. You know, Philip Rivers continues to play at pretty much an elite level. I think the problem is the weapons he has around him. Obviously, if healthy, Keenan Allen looks like a top receiver. Antonio Gates, even at whatever he is, 35, 36, still is performing well. They added Travis Benjamin from Cleveland, who's a home run threat. But the offensive line looks like it has a lot of problems. The running game looks like it. I mean, you know, last year, Danny Woodhead was your best running back, which is not something that you want. So let me ask you, is the Chargers offense going to be better or worse than it was last season?
Tell me, baby, baby, better or worse.
Well, a couple of reasons why the offense is going to be a lot better is, one, Ken Wisenhunt is coming back. He was the offensive coordinator in 2013 when Philip Rivers had his highest completion percentage of his career. Frank Reich is gone too. I mean, he went to the Eagles. So I'm a lot more comfortable with this Chargers offense with Ken Wisenhunt running. I feel like they're going to get the offensive line going forwards instead of backwards. They did a lot of running out of the shotgun last year, and that did not do any favors for Melvin Gordon. The reason why I'm optimistic about the Chargers offense this year is they brought in a new center from the Chicago Bears named Matt Slauson, and this guy is nasty. I think he could possibly be that missing link for the Chargers offensive line. See, I mean, the Chargers offensive line is the key for the Chargers success this year. I mean, they had 24 different offensive line combinations last year, and you just can't run. You can't run. You can't pass. You just can't play football like that. You know, you need continuity on the offensive line. And I think Matt Slauson's going to help sew that up this year.
Yeah. So I had read on Pro Football Focus, the Chargers offensive line was dead last in the NFL in pass blocking efficiency last year. And there were 11 players on that offensive line who saw at least 30 snaps. And that's one of the things you mentioned, sort of the inconsistency there. All 11 of those players also graded negatively in run blocking. So you bring in Matt Slauson. Hopefully he's, you know, a big upgrade right in the middle of that line. But is there going to be improvement, you know, at guard and tackle as well? Or is this still an offensive line that's going to have some problems?
Well, I think bringing in a veteran presence in the middle of that line is going to take some of the pressure off of the guards that are on each side of him and the tackle, because you got a guy there that's a veteran that knows how to communicate effectively with his guards and tackles, and a guy that's, you know, really a commanding presence and has already taken up a leadership position on that offensive line. So I think you know, his addition for the offensive line cannot be understated, and it will show in the regular season.
And speaking about veterans, Philip Rivers is still, you know, he's 35 now. Last year, I think he led the league in pass attempts. He threw for a career high in yardage, and he cut his interception rate down, you know, dramatically from the year before, and I think he led the league in picks. But is there a certain point at which it starts to fall off, or do you think he can maintain this as he gets deep into his 30s?
Well, I mean, when you look at Philip Rivers, we all know he's not a running quarterback. You know, he's a guy that sits in the pocket and, you know, he tears people apart, you know, when he has time. I mean, but obviously that's the key factor. As long as he has an adequate offensive line to keep him upright, I can see him being productive into his late 30s.
And what kind of depth? So I mentioned they added Travis Benjamin and Keenan Allen. Obviously, if he can stay healthy, I mean, he looked like a superstar the first half of the year. For people who had him on their fantasy teams like me, his injury was very unfortunate. And then, you know, we said they still have Antonio Gates, who's, you know, still plodding along. But who do they have beyond those three guys that he can throw the ball to, especially if they have injuries again?
Yeah, a couple of guys to keep an eye on is a second round pick Hunter Henry, who is just, I mean, he's amazing. The guy didn't drop a football in college football last year at all. Zero drops. This guy's a polished route runner. He's a very polished blocker. I mean, that's, you know, very important for a guy that's just coming into the league. And another guy who's kind of like a dark horse candidate that you guys should definitely look out for is Tyrell Williams. He's a 6'5", you know, 220-pound wide receiver who has been, you know, absolutely destroying the defense in camp this year. So those two guys are definitely somebody that I would keep an eye on if I was an opposing team.
So talk for a second about Hunter. I know last year when Gates was missing the first four games with the suspension, people talked up Ladarius Green as a possible replacement. And then when Green came back, when Gates came back, I don't know if they ran, you know, Green didn't seem to be as much a success as they were hoping. They didn't really seem to run that many two tight end sets. So are they going to play Hunter on the other side of Gates, or is it going to be that he's going to sort of, you know, start to spell Gates as Gates gets older?
Well, the thing here with Ladarius Green is the coaches never really believed in Ladarius Green. It seemed like Ladarius never really grasped the playbook. And, you know, when you don't have the confidence of the coaches, you're not going to see much playing time. I do think they're going to see a lot of two tight end sets just because, I mean, yeah, you said Gates is 36 years old, but he's still extremely dangerous. I mean, he's still a very, very good route runner. He knows how to box out defenders. I mean, he's an absolute weapon in the red zone, and he is only going to be made better by Hunter Henry accompanying him on the other side of the line.
All right, so let's switch over to the defense now, where I think there's bigger problems for this team than the offense. Let's start at the front seven. The front seven was not very good last year, and obviously the big upgrade was supposed to be Joey Bosa. As of right now, if you had to put odds on it, is he going to be in a Chargers uniform for game one?
For game one of the regular season, yes. I do believe he's going to be in a Chargers uniform. I spoke to Lee Steinberg, you know, the sporting agent today. He said that, you know, when guys are out of camp for so long, they get itchy. You know, they itch. You know, they want that structure. And I think eventually Joey Bosa is just going to, you know, cave, and they're going to get a deal done. Honestly, both of these parties are at fault in this situation. I think the addition of Brandon Kneebane is going to be huge for this defensive front seven. And, you know, with him in the middle and Corey Legit and Joey Bosa on each side is really going to help solidify the run defense that struggled mightily last year. And it's going to open up the holes for young linebackers Jerry Atauchu and Melvin Ingram to come through and make plays.
All right, then let's talk about the linebackers for a second. Denzel Perryman looked pretty good as a rookie. And Manti Te'o, by the way, Manti Te'o, I'm trying to think of an athlete who was so famous or infamous, I guess, in his case in college, and has been relatively anonymous in the NFL. And nobody can, I guess maybe Reggie Bush is an example, although Reggie Bush, like, he dated a Kardashian. Like, we really don't hear about Manti Te'o anymore. But I saw that of the 94 qualifying linebackers in Pro Football Focus last year, Manti Te'o was 92nd. So maybe he could use some tender love, whether from a girlfriend, real or fake, but he seems to be a problem.
Well, I mean, he is a problem, and, you know, his play did get a lot better when Denzel Perryman was right next to him in the defense. I think that Manti Te'o had some problems with Donald Butler last year. Donald Butler was just awful. I mean, he could not play the linebacker position. He could not tackle. He'd get run through. I mean, it was just terrible. But you kind of see that the Chargers are kind of thinking about life past Manti Te'o with the additions of Jatavis Brown out of Akron and Joshua Perry out of Ohio State. Those two guys, if you put them together, they are a much, much better version of Manti Te'o. And, like I said, Jatavis Brown is an athletic freak. So look out for him to see some significant minutes in the defense this year.
All right, and then in the secondary, you lost Eric Weddle and his glorious beard. He was another one of the guys who I think was pretty emotional in that last home game last year. I think their cornerbacks look pretty decent, but talk a little bit about their safeties and I guess just their secondary in general, if you think it's going to be improved on last year.
I do think it's going to be improved just because, I mean, I don't think Eric Weddle at this point in his career last year was all he was cracked up to be. He was steadily declining. He was going downhill. Jason Verrett on one side looks to be a top five corner in the NFL. I mean, this guy's locked down. If you watched him last year, this guy can lock down any wide receiver in the NFL. On the other side, Brandon Flowers, he seems to be reinvigorated. They talked a lot about how he was very distracted last year and his head was not in the game. He seems to be back to his regular self. this training camp. Obviously, we'll see about that. The safeties, they brought in Dwight Lowry to kind of take over the Eric Weddle position. See, the thing with the Chargers is they don't really value the safety position too much. So, I mean, they really weren't too concerned with who they brought back there. But a couple of guys behind Jahleel Adai, who is a undrafted free agent coming into his third year, is a guy named Dexter McCoil. He's coming from the CFL. He's 6'4", about 220. I mean, when he steps on the field, you automatically know where he is. This guy is a menace. I mean, he's tall, he's fast, and he can tackle. So, I mean, if there's any issues with Lowry or Adai, look for Dexter McCoil to step in.
With the way that the Charger season ended, and obviously it was not the season anybody was expecting, and there was a lot of the off-the-field conversations about the fact that, you know, the team might be moving and there was a lot of uncertainty. Do you think that affects how the players play, or do you think that's just sort of a media narrative and it's sort of, you know, a post-facto justification?
Oh, absolutely. It affects the players. I mean, whether they want to say it or not, I mean, that's swirling around the team.
Yeah, I mean, Philip Rivers needs to find schools for, like, all his kids, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to find some schools for his soccer team he's got there. Yeah. It definitely
is. So then is that still going to be an issue this year? Because it's still sort of in flux what's happening with this team. You know, we don't even know where they're playing in 2017.
I don't think it's going to affect him nearly as much just because now the option is there, but they also have the option to negate it another year if they so choose. So for me, I expect to see if this stadium vote gets a decent, maybe not 50, 66%, but maybe a 50-52. I think they're going to stick around and try and make something work. It all depends on how the turnout is going to be. And honestly, that turnout is going to be determined by how the team is doing when the vote takes place.
All right. So let's jump to a team that also has no idea where the hell they're going to be playing, in the next couple of years. And that's Adam's Oakland Raiders. Adam, whereas the Chargers really have nowhere to go but up because they went 4-12, the Raiders are a team who there really is a lot of justification for really a lot of optimism on this team. It starts offensively, obviously. At the quarterback position, I have to have a little bit of a mea culpa because I trashed Derek Carr up and down last season in the preseason. I ranked him really low in my quarterback rankings, and I did not like him. And he was really, really good in his second year, and the Raiders obviously took a step forward. The receivers, obviously, Michael Crabtree, looked rejuvenated after being, sort of mediocre for a couple of years in San Francisco, and Amari Cooper looked pretty good as a rookie. So this offense already was pretty good. Do you think they're even going to take a step forward, or do you think this is sort of a plateau for now?
No, this offense is definitely going to take another step forward just based on their offensive line play, which with the additions of Assembly this year, and hopefully the healthy comeback of Malik Watson play the right side. They're saying, from various things, that this may be the best line in the game, which obviously we have to see.
I don't agree.
The Cowboys obviously have that right now, but on paper, and you don't win things on paper, but on paper, this offensive line is nasty, and with that, that'll give Carr more time to throw the ball, and that'll open up more lanes for Murray to run, and this offense could definitely take another step forward.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, I don't know how old you are, but we haven't seen a good quarterback and offense in Oakland basically since Rich Gannon in like 2002 when they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay.
Oh, I know. Akiva can tell you. I was with him in Israel for that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so yeah, it's been a long time. I lost money on that game, unfortunately.
I lost my mind in that game, so that's okay.
Yeah. What about at running back? Latavius Murray was sort of the bell cow last year, but he's not particularly impressive.
Murray's still going to be the bell cow, and behind this offensive line, it should be better. They never found the change of pace back last year, like you mentioned before. It was supposed to be Helu. Helu got hurt the whole year, so he really wasn't a factor and has actually been released. They drafted a kid in the fifth round, DeAndre Washington, who's been playing pretty well in the camp so far, and looks like that good change of pace back they need on third down and can give Murray a spell at time. So we'll see what happens with that, but it's definitely Murray's to lose, and he won't lose it. The question is if they have that secondary back to alleviate a little bit off of him.
All right, so let's jump to the defense. The defense also looks obviously you lost the Hall of Famer to retirement, but Khalil Mack is probably the best player on this defense. And
that's not a question.
Okay, yeah.
He's obviously the best player in the conference, if not the league. You could argue he's with J.J. Watt and Von Miller.
You have him over Watt Miller?
I do not have him over Watt. I have him over Miller. Right.
Okay. No way.
We'll give Travis a chance to respond.
I'll argue that later, but I will take over Miller.
Yeah. Okay. So talk about this front seven beyond Khalil Mack, obviously, who's getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback and actually in the running game as well. To talk a little bit about who else they have in the front seven.
They added Bruce Irvin this year, who they're going to let rush the quarterback like he hasn't done since his rookie year in Seattle. That was a big get that actually came out of the blue, and that should be a great compliment over to Mack. Up front, they have Mario Edwards coming back. Had a great rookie year until he got derailed by a neck injury that they thought might have taken him out for his career, but has actually come back strong. They have Dan Williams and Justin Ellis up front, space eaters who can take line play off of allow Mack to play, have space to run. And that's the front seven, really. I mean, they really are going to be going with a 5-2 look as opposed to more of a, or even to a 3-4 look. They're going to be very multiple in their fronts. The linebackers are a little thin in the middle with Malcolm Smith and Ben Heaney. And after that, they're a little thin. But with Mack and Irvin and the front four, they should be okay in their front seven.
All right, and then the secondary got a bunch of new names. As I said, obviously, I think they brought in Sean Smith from the Chiefs. Is that right?
That is correct. Another big get from the offseason.
Yeah, so it's always good when you get a guy from the division, obviously, because it's it's a zero-sum game.
I'm still bitter.
I'm sure. It was very nice to take him from the Chiefs because he definitely hurt us last year when we played him two times. But yeah, they also added Carl Joseph in the draft, who, again, coming back from injury, but before that injury, he looked like a thumper in the middle of safety position, which every team dreams of. Then they added Reggie Nelson off the to serve as that veteran safety. I guess they're trying to a little replace Charles Woodson. And then they have the reclamation project, Dave Anderson, who off the scrap heap last year, and somehow I think a corner Pro Football Focus or one of those was one of the top corners in the league last year. So yeah, they definitely have some potential in that. In the back, in the secondary as well.
All right, so you sound pretty optimistic. We'll get to some more predictions down the road at the end of the podcast. But, just in terms of expectations, if the Raiders take another step forward this year, go 9-7, just miss the playoffs, will you say, all right, this is a pretty good season, best season we've had in Oakland in a long time, we're taking a step in the right direction, or will you be disappointed? Like, is your expectation that we have to make the playoffs this year for the season to be a success?
That's tough to say. I mean, it should be playoff or bust, but seeing we haven't had a winning season in 12 years, I can't really say I'd be upset going 9-7. But yeah,
14.
Is it 14? It's 14. Yeah. So, but so yeah, I try to block things out. So yeah, if we go 9-7, could I be upset? No, but it's playoffs are the expectation with this after this offseason and this draft.
Okay, so now let's jump to a team that is frequently above 500 and has made the playoffs a bunch, but hadn't won a playoff game in I think we said last year it had been something like 20 years or something like that. And so Cole, after the heartbreak in 2013 to the Colts, you finally did get to see a playoff victory last year. So congratulations on that.
It's been a great couple of years in Kansas City.
Yeah. And you were pretty you were one of our most accurate guests last season. I think you predicted the Chiefs to go exactly 11-5. You thought that they wouldn't win the division, but they'd be close to the Broncos. You were at that game against the Broncos that they lost last year, right?
I don't want to talk about that game.
All right. Okay. So let's start on the offense. The issue always with the offense with this team is that obviously you have a superstar in Jamaal Charles, but it seems like the ceiling on this offense, the floor is pretty high, but the ceiling is pretty low because Alex Smith that's the kind of quarterback he is. It's low ceiling, high floor. So is this offense, is there room to actually improve on last year? Or do you think, the offense can continue to do, a reasonably decent job and then it's up to the defense to really take the team to the next level?
Macklin is their only weapon.
I think that the Chiefs offense is very predictable. However, the problem that we had last year was with consistency on the offensive line. We had just not as bad as the Chargers, but just overall, we just had a rotating door. And so hopefully this year with a more steady offensive line, I think we'll have a more steady output, more predictable offensive output on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, you also, for the first time in forever, you actually had a receiver catch a touchdown pass. So congratulations. Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce look like, two very good receiving options. Who else does Alex Smith have to throw to?
Not many.
Well, Frankie Hammond was a guy that was coming on more and more as the year went on last year. And a controversial draft pick in Tyreek Hill, who you know, it is what it is. But he had a run in with the law in that he had some domestic violence accusations, and I guess they were true against him. I guess they're not accusations if they go through the court system.
It's an interesting euphemism. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, he actually, Dave Tube, who used to be with the Bears back when Devin Hester was tearing up the NFL on the return game, has actually come out and said in the last week that Tyreek Hill is the fastest player he's ever coached and looks like an electric force. So, I mean, we heard the same thing as a couple years ago with the Anthony Thomas, and you never know how speed, just pure speed, is going to translate to the regular season, but he looks like a good weapon that we picked up in the draft. And then we had a tight end last year that just as the year went on got more and more or played better and better in the name of Demetrius Harris. And I'm excited to see how he's going to come along as well this year.
All right. And in the backfield, you know, Jamaal Charles, obviously one of the best in the game when healthy. He's coming off an ACL and now he's going to turn 30 this year. And obviously the track record of running backs who turn 30 is not very good. On the other hand, I'm not even sure, is it the system or is it Charles? Because no matter who they stuck in there, whether it was Charcandrick West or Spencer Ware, you know, and fantasy players, again, were really frustrated at it being a different guy every week. But it seemed like no matter who they put in there, he was good for 100 yards and a touchdown. So do you need Charles or do you think that this offense is moving past him?
Well, we were never going to – there was a lot of talk in the offseason by Chiefs fans that we should trade Jamaal Charles, and that was never going to happen because, as you said, his value is with the Chiefs. It is greater than any trade value we would get in return because of his health and the questions therein. But having said that, the running backs behind him were stellar all of last year. Charcandrick West is a bigger back, and he is actually through training camp so far is in the number two. Spencer Ware is more of a three role. Spencer Ware was more of a Jamaal Charles type of player, but he just has no he cannot stay healthy.
All right, so let's get to the defense now. Again, this is a team who the offense, you said, is might be predictable. The defense, especially the front seven, has really been a strength pretty much for at least as long as the Andy Reid era, if not even earlier. And now you add Chris Jones, the second round pick, obviously, you know, to add to Houston and Tamba Holly and everybody else you have there already.
The front seven, it should be pretty good. Now, we still aren't sure about the health of Justin Houston. It came out in the offseason that he had a surgery on his ACL just out of the blue. It turned out that it wasn't completely torn, but it's not entirely clear when he'll be back. It's possible he could be back week one. It's possible he could be back week eight. There's really no information out there for the public.
Do you watch the show Ballers on HBO?
Yeah, it's a great show.
So what, was Houston playing paintball or was he working out or yeah. We don't really know?
I don't know. Well, it was during the season last year and he tried to come back on it and play after sitting out a few weeks, but he just wasn't the same player. But then you have Derek Johnson, Tamba Holly, who are great players, but they're just getting up there in age. But then you have great backups behind them. The front seven, honestly, should be pretty solid. Last year, Dontari Poe was actually outplayed, surprisingly, by his backup, Jay Howard. And so it's looking actually more and more like we might let Dontari Poe go after this year and put Jay Howard in that nose tackle position.
All right, in the secondary, obviously the big story last year was Eric Berry coming back from cancer to become, you know, a star again, which is obviously really impressive.
An NFL comeback player of the year.
Yeah, and we talked about how you lost Sean Smith within the division. So how do you replace him?
Yeah, well, last year Marcus Peters obviously had a great rookie year in the other corner spot opposite of Sean Smith. And we had a couple young guys last year that looked really good in Philip Gaines before he tore his ACL during the season. And then in the draft this year, we also drafted a guy by the name of Eric Murray in the fourth round who looks like he's going to be pretty good. So, you know, we're not really – it's a little sketchy back there because we lost Sean Smith and we have just a bunch of rookies. But with the combination of Eric Berry, who will eventually come back – he hasn't signed his tender or anything yet, but he will be back before the season starts – and Ron Parker and there's a bunch of experience in the safety, but on the corners it's a little bit of a question mark.
All right, so now let's jump to the class, not just of the division, but obviously of the entire NFL last year, the reigning Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos.
Yay.
Travis, I can't remember the last time. Obviously, when the Broncos won, in '98, the second Super Bowl with Elway, he rode off into the sunset. But at least we knew who the starting quarterback was going to be the next year. I can't remember the time that a reigning Super Bowl champion. You have no idea what's happening at quarterback, and really none of the options are good. You know, You just want a guy who's not going to turn the ball over so the defense can do its job. But Mark Sanchez is not known for that. Paxton Lynch, you know, is a rookie who played in a, you know, non-power conference, and so it's hard to know how much to expect from him. So first of all, tell us about how the quarterback race is going, who you think is going to have the edge, and how he's going to do.
Yeah, I think for everybody in Denver who watched every snap of every game, we're actually looking forward to this season. As much as I love Peyton Manning, we all love Peyton Manning because he did some amazing things here in turning Denver's culture around. Last year, he threw 9 touchdowns to 17 interceptions for 2,000-something yards. He was pitiful. Osweiler didn't do much better. So all Sanchez or Simeon have to do is slightly better, and our offense is improved. And just like as I was listening, everybody has problems on offensive line. We did as well. So our offensive line is improved as well. So the fact that we don't know who exactly our starter is going to be, whether it's Sanchez or Simeon, doesn't really cause too much concern. We actually think that no matter who it is, they're going to play better than Peyton Manning did last year. And so we're excited about that. I personally think when the season starts, it'll be Sanchez. Sanchez is the – today they were announced as co-starters for the Bears game. But, you know, Sanchez is the veteran. So it would be really hard to go from Simeon to Sanchez, but it won't be so hard to go Sanchez to Simeon and maybe even Paxton Lynch as the season wears on.
But again, you know, look, obviously, look, I'm a Peyton Bobo. I think he's not just the greatest quarterback of all time, but the greatest football player of all time. And I acknowledge he was probably the worst, you know, the worst quarterback to start a majority of the season last year in the NFL. But that touchdown interception ratio, that's sort of a Mark Sanchez specialty. So
he's playing for Gary Kubiak. And if you guys saw what Gary Kubiak did in the playoffs with Peyton Manning, including in the Super Bowl, where, you know what, run, we're going to see a lot of that this year. That's Gary Kubiak special. We're going to see.
But Peyton Manning is also, you know, obviously he was limited physically, but he's also, you know, probably the smartest quarterback ever. Does Mark Sanchez have the wherewithal to know his limitations the way that Peyton did?
He doesn't need to be, and I don't think Peyton Manning, as smart as Peyton Manning is, Peyton Manning was throwing those interceptions, and I think really time caught up with him, and he couldn't really accept it. Now, I sound like I'm bashing on Peyton Manning because I'm really not. Like, he really turned our team around, but it was over a course of the seasons. I don't believe that Peyton Manning had much to do with our Super Bowl last year. So I'm confident with Mark Sanchez or whoever's under the helm. They're going to be playing, you know, a Dilfer kind of role for the Broncos as we go for a second Super Bowl.
All right, and you talked about that offensive line. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're going to have 4 new starters on the offensive line?
Well, yeah, so really we have the centers, the only guy that's returning, Matt Paradis from last year. We actually picked up Russell Okung from Seattle, and then Donald Stevenson actually from the Chiefs. So, you know, I don't know. What I know about the offensive line this year is last year Mark Schlereth came on the radio, ESPN, every week, and just eviscerated these guys, just skewered them, just said they were terrible, they were horrible. It's kind of a big deal in Denver because Stink was ripping on them so much. His analysis of the offensive line this year is he can't say enough about them. He's praising them, and it's also the idea of this is we're going back to the time of Gary Kubiak and John Elway, where with the cut blocks and. And I think that we're really going to see the offensive line shore up because just they're coached better. So it'll remain to be seen. You know, as everybody on this call, everybody has problems on the offensive line, and you really never know till the game start. But it couldn't be much worse than it was last year, and we won the Super Bowl. So I think that our offense is going to be improved. Maybe even if it's slightly improved, I'd watch out.
Okay, and let's just talk about the running backs for a second. I think that the only running back in the last decade to have 1,100 yards for this team was Willis McGahee in, like, 2011. In fact, I'm going back, it's all the way back to 2004, Ruben Drones. Now, maybe they didn't need that when Peyton was throwing for 5,000 yards, but especially if you're leaning on the running game, who is it going to be? Or do you think it's going to be sort of a committee between Anderson and Hillman that's been the last couple of years?
I really think it's going to be C.J. Anderson. I think C.J. Anderson is really built in that Gary Kubiak mold. Gary Kubiak wants to run the ball. Gary Kubiak inherited Peyton Manning. I mean, it was a little bit, you know, there was some tension last year on how the offense was going to run, and he kind of did a masterful job in balancing – both the egos of Osweiler and Manning, but he really wants to run. He doesn't want this to be a quarterback focused league. So I think CJ Anderson is really where they're gonna put their efforts in. I'm not a huge Ronnie Hillman fan just because I've seen him fumble the ball away. I've seen him get hurt. You know, we got this new kid, Devontae Booker, and then we have Capri Bibbs, who went up to school just up the road at Colorado State University, who keeps making the team. Then he's on the practice squad, and then he's come back now. I think it's been about 3 years. So I would, if I had to guess, I would say Ronnie Hillman somewhere will be injured or will be cut or will be benched. And I'm really looking at, I would say Devontae Booker, and don't forget Juwan Thompson. Juwan Thompson right now, he's listed at second on the depth chart for fullback, but he's a halfback, and he's really, really fast. And he's someone that the Broncos keep bringing back every year, even if he doesn't make the final roster.
All right. So let's jump to the defense. Obviously by the end of the year, last year, this was a historic all-time defense. And like any Super Bowl winner, you're going to lose, you know, some key pieces. I think Danny Trevathan and Malik Jackson. But other than that, they haven't really lost anybody. Actually, I just saw a headline today that said Aqib Talib might face an 8-game suspension for an off-the-field incident.
Right. So, yeah. So he, you know, he, depending on the story you hear, he either shot himself in the thigh or the gun magically.
Oh, the Plaxico special.
Yeah, I have no idea. But you know what? Aqib Talib.
He's lucky it didn't happen in New York, though. It happened in Texas.
So. If I could just jump in here, as a student at KU that has followed Aqib Talib's entire career, that story didn't shock me.
Yeah. I don't think it shocked anyone here either. But I'll tell you what, Talib is, he's a fantastic player. He's great. And, you know, that's a really stiff suspension. But I'll tell you what. We are secondary, and the people that are sitting on our bench would start for most any other team. And the idea of Aqib Talib going away for 8 games doesn't really frighten me and doesn't frighten most people, because Bradley Roby is sitting there and he's ready to play, and he is a stud. And I think he would start on any other team. So if Aqib Talib wants to take, you know, I mean, not that he wants to, but if he has to take 8 weeks off and get refreshed for the playoffs, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt us much. We, you know, we also have, you know, the other, we lost Malik Jackson as well. And I think Malik Jackson was, you know, was for us, a lot of people were surprised that he was gone. But I also think that the people stepping up, our front three up front are just studs.
Whenever you have a defense, that's great. When your quarterback is so limited, the margin of error for a team is going to be less. Because it's not. Thanks. It's not like you're putting up 40 points. And like the example to me that comes to mind is the Ravens in 2000, which is really the last team to win with such a dominant defense and mediocre quarterback and Trent Dilfer. They were a pretty good team for the next number of years under Brian Billick, but they didn't win more than 10 games again, or, you know, even make it deep into the playoffs until 2006, 6 years later. And by that point, they had brought Steve McNair, who was a competent quarterback. So you can't move any higher, obviously, than winning the Super Bowl. But, you know, what are the expectations in Denver this year? That, you know, that hopefully you go 10-6 and make it to the playoffs, or...
Well, I think that what you just said...
You're playing with house money. You won the Super Bowl.
I know. Yeah. What you just said is one of the Denver Broncos, we are coming into this season with a chip on our shoulder, and I think that should scare teams, because whether it's an incorrect perception or not, but listening to you now, I think maybe it is a correct perception.
No one believes
the Broncos. The Broncos feel they are the least respected Super Bowl winner in recent history, and they're mad. And that doesn't usually happen with the Super Bowl champs. And I agree with you. I agree with you on the margin of error. But Gary Kubiak, that's his specialty, is don't commit errors. And we may have a vanilla, boring offense, but the idea is he doesn't have to deal with the ego of Peyton Manning, who's going to be throwing balls because he throws balls and throwing interceptions. We are going to be a run it down your throat team, and just don't throw the interception, and then let the defense take over. So anyway, I think the Broncos, they have a chip on their shoulder because they really feel like they're being disrespected. And whether or not, you know, that's the East Coast bias or what have you, I think that, you know, the Denver Broncos are hungry this year.
As a Kansas City Royals fan, that heard the exact same things prior to this season, that chip on their shoulder isn't always quite the same intensity as before they won the championship.
But baseball is so different. Baseball is, I mean, it's, I would say it's so much harder to repeat in baseball than it would be in football. And also, just to be quite frank, it's the division we're in. So I don't know. Are we going to win the Super Bowl? Not sure. Are we going to win the division? I'm pretty confident about that. And I think we'll at least have a home game. So
throws down the gauntlet there. Whoa. All right. So let's get to our best in the division, which has not been that competitive or interesting for the couple divisions we've done so far. But in this division, I think there's some really good questions. So let's start at coach. Mirror on the wall. I said, who's the best? I'll start with you, Travis. Without getting into a whole spiel, but who is the best head coach in this division, in your opinion?
Gary Kubiak, okay. Super Bowl winner.
All right, so let's see how this goes. Cole, who is the best head coach in this division? In your
Not
opinion?
Gary Kubiak.
Okay, who?
I'm going to go with Andy Reid. I think he's probably top two or three best coaches in the league.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'm a guy who really likes Reed. I discount his in-game,
yeah,
you know,
minus the clock management.
Up.
If he could just get a guy to stand by him with a timer, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think last year in our coach power rankings that Akiva and I did, I think I had Reed like sixth, because the bottom line is he's won year after year after year in Philadelphia and Kansas City. So even if he, you know, can't figure out the clock or challenges, he's doing something right.
Or win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Okay, Adam, what about you?
Again, it's not Gary Kubiak. It's Andy.
Thank you.
It's the best.
All right. And David, your opinion here?
Yeah, it's definitely Andy Reid.
Okay, yeah. So I tend to agree with you as well. But, you know, obviously Travis has the ring right now. So
he definitely does.
All right. So, and let's get to another one where, again, I think it's an interesting question here. I know who I think, but we'll go in reverse order this time. David, who's the best quarterback in this division?
I think it's pretty obvious that it's Philip Rivers.
Okay, Adam, do you agree, or
yeah,
you're up
only,
and comer?
There's only one answer. It's Rivers right now. Carr could take it, but it's Rivers right now.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I'm surprised because I thought you might make an argument for Carr, but...
No, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Cole, what about you? You have the guy who doesn't turn the ball over or throw it more than 5 yards down the field. Are you going to make an argument for him, or do you think it's Rivers as well?
I absolutely love Alex Smith for our team, but no, it's Philip Rivers.
All right, and is that a clean sweep, Travis?
No. I'm a Denver Broncos fan.
I will never say
Philip Rivers. Yeah, it's Derek Carr for sure.
Don't be delusional.
Okay. All right. I thought you were going to say Mark Sanchez.
Don't be delusional.
I had Carr on my fantasy team last year, and I think this kid's going to be good. I think he's really going to be good. Too bad, you know, Del Rio's his coach. But yeah,
Rivers has done it for like 12 years in a row. So.
I know.
Talk
and
to
actually,
me when Carr does.
No, and I have to say that as a Bronco fan, actually, Philip Rivers is, you know, we've had fantastic games against Philip Rivers. Love to watch him, but he's another guy like, you know, I mean, they went 4-12 last year, and they haven't won, and he hasn't won anything. And so if I got to think about it on potential wise, I think it's going to be Carr.
You know, actually, so I like this little rivalry we have going right now between David and Travis. I thought the Chargers Broncos rivalry was really great when you had Cutler against Rivers, because they're both sort of such jerks on it.
Yeah.
But I was surprised. ESPN had this thing where they were asking their reporter for each team who the biggest rival is. And David, the guy for San Diego said that the Raiders are the Chargers' biggest rival. Is that how you feel? Or how most Chargers fans feel?
I mean, that's what it was when we were beating them, you know, 7 years in a row. And, you know, but I
not
know.
Last year.
That's why I said win. I mean, I know that. I know we got swept by you guys last year. It's not going to happen again this year. But I actually think
it will again this year.
No, it won't. The games are more competitive with the Broncos, in my opinion.
It's another home game for the Raiders.
I would say, I mean, if you would let me talk, I can get my word out. I would say it's the Broncos. So honestly, I think we have better games. I think it's more competitive and it's more fun to watch.
So Cole and Adam, does that mean everybody in this division sees the Broncos as their biggest rival?
Yeah, the champs. Well, how could
they not? And look, it's the same. Look, I'm a Vikings fan, and I think the Packers are our biggest rival, and Bears fans think the same, and nobody actually cares what Lions fans think. But Travis, from your perspective, who do you think is the biggest rival for the Broncos? Not this year, but just in general. Like, who's the team that you see as your biggest rival?
I mean, I would say right now it's Kansas City just because they're good. But I will say that I am riding high on this ring, and I think we're going to do fantastic. But I go to every game, And anytime it's an AFC West team, I'm a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit worried just because I know that the Raiders aren't afraid of us. The Chargers aren't afraid of us. The Chiefs aren't afraid of us. And so, you know, it's what makes division football fun.
All right, so let's get to this next question. And, you know, I thought I'm definitely on Team Reed and Team Rivers. For this one, I really don't know what the answer is. And my question is, who has the best offense in this division? So, Travis, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would have to say, you know, I think that potential it's going to be the Raiders. I really do. I think they've got a really good young offense, and I think that they have a lot to look forward to if Del Rio doesn't screw it up.
Cole, who has the best offense in this division?
I really like the Raiders' offense. I think if Jamal Charles comes back and is Jamal Charles of the past, I think Chiefs have the best. No, I'm saying I think if Jamal Charles comes back and is the Jamal Charles of old, it's the Chiefs. But if not, I think it's the Raiders.
All right, so Adam, you think it's Oakland as well, I assume?
I have to go with the Raiders at this point after hearing those gushing remarks from my Broncos and Chiefs fans over there. So, yes.
Okay, David, what about you? Is this a clean sweep?
I don't believe that the Raiders have the best offense because they only have one wide receiver you really have to worry about covering.
Shots fired. Don't respect Crabtree.
So you don't respect Crabtree, or you think Cooper drops the ball too much?
No, I don't. I think Crabtree is definitely coverable.
You're on Richard Sherman's side.
Yes, I am. I mean, Amari Cooper is a superstar in the making. I'll definitely give you guys that. But I think the best offense in the league. Or not the league, but the best offense in the conference is the Chargers offense, and you'll see that this year.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Who's your second receiver?
Travis Benjamin.
Yeah, they got him from
Travis guy, Benjamin yeah. over Crabtree. Okay.
He's way faster than Crabtree. Way faster.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait till we get a quarterback, because we have, you know, we have two receivers named Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders that, you know.
Yes, that is the problem. If the Broncos ever had a quarterback, yeah. I'd go back to that.
Issue there. All right, so we have no consensus yet on any of these. This last one, I think there will be, but now I'm not sure. So, David, we'll start with you. Who has the best defense in the division?
That's the Broncos. I mean, there's no question about that.
All right. Okay, good. Cole?
Broncos, unfortunately.
All right, Adam, you agree as well?
It's the Broncos.
Okay, all right. So we got some consensus there. So that's good. But, yeah, so there's a lot. And I think that those other ones, those are good questions. You know, there's David accepted. I don't think there's any David's opinion accepted. I don't think there's any great offense in this division. There's a lot of potential for every team, you know, including Denver, I suppose, if they can address the quarterback issue. But yeah, there's no clear cut answer there. So that was some interesting takes. We're gonna skip the roster game today because Akiva had to bow out early thanks to some Zika infected Florida sushi. Which is surprising because you would think of South Florida as the place to get the best sushi in the world, but you know who knew? Apparently, South Florida not known for its sushi.
Yeah,
not Kansas
or Denver.
Not any of the places that any of us are from, if we're being honest. Okay, so let's jump to predictions. So we're doing it a little bit different this year. We're going to ask your rival to tell us what your record's going to be. So we're going to start with you, David, and we're going to have you tell us who the Raiders are going to be. So I'm going to run through the Raiders' schedule quickly, and you just let me know if each of these is a win or a loss. And Adam, you just have to sit there and bite your tongue at least till he's finished. So week one, the Oakland Raiders start on the road at New Orleans.
Loss.
Oh, so home against the Falcons in week two.
I think that's a win.
Okay, so 1-1. Then they go on the road to Tennessee, Marcus Mariota.
That's a win.
Okay, 2-1, and then on the road at Baltimore.
That's a win.
Coming off a disappointing season. Oh, so you don't believe Baltimore is going to turn it around this year, or at least not in that game. So
I don't.
A week one loss, all of a sudden they're 3-1, and they come home to host your San Diego Chargers.
That'll be a loss.
Okay, so they lose at home to San Diego after sweeping them last year. That's 3-2, and then another home divisional game against Kansas City.
That's going to be a tough game. I'm going to say it's a win.
Okay, so 4-2. Oakland's still looking pretty good. Then they go on the road at Jacksonville the next week.
That's a win.
Interesting. There's a lot of hype. I would say other than the Raiders, the Jaguars probably the team in the AFC with the most preseason hype. But most of our predictors are not too keen on them so far. So
too many pieces for them to have to put together and get some rhythm going. So I think it's going to take a little bit.
All right. And so they're on the road again the next week at Tampa and Jameis Winston.
That's going to be an interesting game too. But I think they're going to lose that one.
All right. So they lose. They're 5-3. And, you know, a pretty good first half to the season and not a lot of national attention yet. But finally in week 9, they get a Sunday night football game against the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. That's at home.
I'll give them a win.
All right. So big win on national TV. They head into their bye at 6-3. And then they get an extra day because they come out of the bye and they play Monday night football against Houston and J.J. Watt.
That game's in Mexico City.
So it's a home game in Mexico City.
I think that's a loss.
Okay. Well, I guess Houston's closer to Mexico City. So maybe that'll be a home game for J.J. Watt. I don't know. All right. So they're 6-4. And then another home game and another tough game against Carolina.
Carolina, oh, that's a loss.
6-3 going into the bye. Now they're reeling a little bit. And at 6-5, probably a must-win game at home against the Buffalo Bills.
That's a win.
And this is really a brutal way for the Raiders schedule to go. You end the season with road division matchups for three of your last four games of the season. And that starts at Kansas City.
That's a loss.
At San Diego, try to get revenge for that home loss in October.
I'll give them a win.
Okay, so you split each time the road team winning.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you have 8 wins, and still in the playoff race, you come home to face Andrew Luck and the Colts.
Ooh, that's tough. I'm going to give them a loss in that one.
Okay, so now they're 8-7. I don't know if they're in the wild card race or not, but either way, it's a must win in Week 17 at Denver on New Year's Day.
That's a loss.
All right, so you see the Raiders going 8-8, which is has been the high watermark for this team for a long time. So not quite in the playoffs yet. Adam, how do you feel about the Raiders going 8-8 this year?
That would be very disappointing, and I don't see that happening. I think it's getting at least one more win out of that and be at least 9-7, and I think they'll actually go 10-6.
All right, okay. So now so if you're going to do that, you're going to have to leapfrog one of these teams in your division, and the team you finished behind last year was Kansas City. So tell me how they're going to do. They're going to start week 1 at home against the Chargers.
They beat the Chargers.
Okay, then week 2 at Houston.
Lose that one.
And then they come home to face the Jets.
Beat that one.
All right, 2-1. Then they go on the road at Pittsburgh.
They lose that.
Early bye week, and then they come back off the bye, and they're at Oakland.
At Oakland, they lose that one.
Okay, so they drop to 2-3. Then they're at home against the Saints.
That's a win.
And then they go at Indianapolis the next week.
They'll go with the Indian win.
All right, so they go into Indy and beat Andrew Luck and the Colts 4-3. And we know Akiva on this podcast, he is the Colts hater. He says 2-53, it's the worst team in the league. He thinks it's all Andrew Luck. And Andrew Luck
it is all Andrew Luck.
And he wasn't so great last year. All right, so they're 4-3. Now they come home and they face Jacksonville.
They'll win that one. This is all predicated that Justin Houston is healthy for these first 7 games.
Yep, okay. Okay, then they go at Carolina to face the defending NFC champions.
Lose that one.
Okay, then they come home and face Tampa.
That's an easy win.
All right, then they go at Denver.
They'll lose that one in Denver.
Okay, so they're 6-5 and not doing as well as the previous season, but their schedule gets a little bit easier in December, actually. It starts at Atlanta.
They'll win that one.
All right, so 7-5 and then short 3 days rest. They're playing on Thursday Night Football against Oakland.
Loss.
Well, they're going to split the series with Oakland this year, so I gave the win before, so they have to win this one.
They lost. Okay, so now they're 8-5, riding the ship a little bit, and they're at home the next week against Tennessee.
That's a win.
Okay, so I spoke too soon. 6-5, all of a sudden they're 9-5. And this game could be with the division on the line in week 16 on Christmas. And I think most of the games that week are going to be on Saturday, Christmas Eve this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, but they're playing the Broncos on Sunday Night Football on Christmas night.
Well, they have a one game on Sunday? Interesting.
Yeah, I guess so. Sunday Night Football, yeah. Everybody gets to open their presents and then watch that game.
Games in Kansas City?
That game's in Kansas City.
KC wins that one.
Oh, wow. So from 6-5 to 10-5.
Just like last year, they go on a run.
Yeah, now look, can they win the division? They finish at San Diego to end the season on New Year's.
Nope, San Diego pulls a surprise.
Okay, so the Chiefs said 10-6. Cole, how do you feel about 10-6?
That was exactly my number.
All right, and especially if you're 6-5, I think you'll take 10-6 at that point.
The only big disagreement I had, and obviously you just flip-flop some games here and there, was at Pittsburgh. I think we win that. Only because they're out Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant to suspensions this first 4 weeks.
All right,
so good point.
Yep.
I still like that Pittsburgh offense. Not gonna lie, even without those two.
Yeah, I mean they looked pretty good with D'Angelo Williams last year.
Yeah,
they did. It's not a big loss. They'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So now, Cole, you get to decide whether 10-6 is enough to win the division because we're gonna have you do the Broncos. So the Broncos are gonna start the season in the traditional style on Thursday night at home against Carolina.
Loss.
And then they get 10 days rest and they face the Colts at home.
I'm going to go with loss.
Okay, so 0-2 start.
I think even if Andrew Luck has injury problems again this year, that's only week two, so he should be healthy and raring to go.
Yep. Okay, so they're starting 0-2, and then it doesn't get any easier because then they go at Cincinnati in week three.
I got to give them a win somewhere, so we'll go with a win.
Oh, wow. So they lose at home, and then they win at Cincinnati, who, you know.
Honestly, I think the Colts and Bengals, it could go either way in both of them. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so you have them 1-2 through three games. That's fine. And then in week four, they go at Tampa Bay.
Win.
So they even up the schedule. Then they come home in week five to face Atlanta.
Win.
And then in week six, they go at San Diego on Thursday night. So that's on short rest.
Let's go with a win.
Okay. So now they're 4-2 all of a sudden. And then they got 11 days off from a Thursday to a Monday night football game against Houston at home.
I have no idea what to think of Houston this year. I think with Brock Osweiler, that'll be an interesting storyline at least.
That's true. Yep. Does Brock get booed by you and the Denver fans?
Oh. Brent? Who? What's his name? he's got a lot coming. We're gonna stomp them that day.
All right, Cole. What's gonna happen in that
Let's
game?
Let's go with a loss just because I like his confidence. I gotta go with a loss.
All right, so now they're 4-3, and then they face San Diego again.
All right, so let's say it's a loss now.
Okay, so they split. So now they're 4-4, the Broncos, and now they face. Now they play on Sunday Night Football the next week. At the Oakland Raiders.
Win.
Okay, so you don't think that they're up and coming just yet. So now they're 5-4, and then they go at the Saints the next week.
Win.
All right, so 6-4. They got a late bye week, which is good. They get to rest up. And then right after Thanksgiving, at home against Kansas City in a big game.
Let's go with a win.
Okay, so the Broncos are 7-4. Then they go at Jacksonville.
Win.
And then at Tennessee.
Win.
Okay, so now they're coming off a 5-game winning streak. All of a sudden, they're 9-4, and they face they got a few tough games in the season. Week 15, the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, unsuspended by that point, presumably.
Very, very much a loss.
Okay, so they lose at home to the Patriots, and then they go at Kansas City on Christmas, as we said, Sunday Night Football.
Loss.
9-6, and so they're playing at home against Oakland. And if Kansas City's 10-6, then at 9-6, this is a must win.
I would say that's a win. I think that's the bright number for a Mark Sanchez led offense.
Okay, so 10-6 for both Denver and Kansas City. We're not going to get into the tiebreakers yet to see who's going to win the division with that one. Travis, what say you about 10-6 for the Broncos this year?
I have us at 13-3.
Oh my God!
Go
home. So yep, and
13-3 with Sanchez. Are you kidding me?
with butt fumble? Are you sure?
With the defense in this conference, you're going
13-3. I think that the schedule actually is good for us. Are we the only team that plays the Patriots every single year?
Well, because you both win the division.
So, right. I know. Yeah.
This is why you're 150 games over 500 last year.
Yeah. All right. So this is why we're doing it this way this year. So we get have the opposite perspective. All right. So, okay, Travis, now you're going to tell us the Chargers. So you're going to tell us how the Chargers are going to do. So in week one, they're at Kansas City.
Loss.
Okay. Then they come home in week two against the Jaguars.
Win.
All right. Yeah. So the Jaguars do not have a win yet in the 32 Fans podcast this year. So, Albin, if you're listening, you guys are going to have to do some work. All right.
Sorry,
week
Albin.
Three at Indianapolis.
Loss.
All right, 1-2, and then at home against the Saints.
Win.
Okay, and then at Oakland.
Loss.
And then at home against the Broncos.
Loss.
Of course.
Right, and then at Atlanta.
Win.
And then at Denver.
Loss.
Of course.
3-5, then at home against Tennessee.
They're going to win that.
And then at home against the Dolphins.
They're going to win that.
All right, so they're 5-5 headed into the bye, already more wins than last year.
Chargers' problem is always second half of the season.
All right, yeah, this whole... Well, yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, wasn't it, when Phillip Rivers was like the MVP of the league through the first 6 weeks?
Yeah, the Chargers always look like they start out gangbusters, and then you don't know what happens.
Okay, so 5-5, coming out of the bye at Houston.
I think they're going to beat Houston, though.
Oh, wow, big win. 6-5, and then they come home to face Tampa Bay.
I think they're going to beat them.
Oh, wow, so all of a sudden, the San Diego Chargers off a 4-win season, 7-5, and if I recall correctly, Kansas City is going to be 7-5 at that point. Denver's going to be – no, they're going to be 8-4. And Oakland, I forget. So, yeah, this could be a very tight race in this division. Then they go at Carolina in week 14.
That's a loss.
Loss.
Yeah.
All right, and then they come home to face the Raiders.
Loss.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so they lose to the Raiders again, drop to 7-7 on December 24th, Christmas Eve, in Cleveland, which is where you want to be for Christmas, really.
Yep. Win.
Okay, yeah. Nobody's giving the Browns any wins either. RG3, you're not a believer in RG3.
Nope.
Okay, so 8-7. So maybe a playoff berth on the line in Week 17 at home against the Chiefs.
Loss.
Okay, so 8-8 though. So how would you feel, David, if you double last year's win total?
I mean, I would be encouraged by the improvement, but I think, like I said before, the way this team goes as far as the offensive line goes, I will say if they play at least, if the starting offensive line plays at least 15 games this year, then they have an incredible chance of winning the AFC West.
Oh, wow. Well, and the problem is also that, you know, even doubling your wins is improvement, but when your quarterback's 35 years old, you know, you don't have, that's sort of what we've seen in New Orleans last couple of years. You don't have that much time to sort of tread water.
Exactly. The window is closing with Philip Rivers. He's probably got 3 or 4 more good seasons left, and that's going to be it.
Yeah. All right. So interesting. So yeah, we have no losing teams in this division, according to our fans of the other teams in the division. We have Kansas City and Denver duking out at 10-6, and then we have Oakland and San Diego at 8-8. So, but nobody below 500. Let's wrap up the podcast. I'm going to give each one of you guys. Akiva hates when I call this rant time. But we don't have a better name for it yet. So I'm going to give each one of you just like 30 seconds. Tell me the thing, whether it's a player or anything. What's the thing you hate most about this team? The most frustrating thing about your team. So Cole, we'll start with you.
No, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I hate the uncertainties with the injuries and I have no idea if Jamaal Charles is going to be the same player. I have no idea if Tom Bahali is going to be able to play every game this year. D Ford is inconsistent as hell. He had that one game last year with the Chargers where he was great and the rest he was like non-existent. I have no idea if Justin Houston's going to play. I have no idea with so many positions this year that this team could go 10-6. They could go 12-4. They could go 8-8 and I wouldn't be shocked anyway.
All right, Adam, what about you? What do you hate the most about this Raiders team?
This Raiders team is most...
very You're all love for this Raiders team.
This the first time in like 12 years, 14 years that I've actually been happy about a Raiders team. I guess the stigma that of winning the offseason and all the caveats that come with that of when you win the offseason, spend on free agency, usually don't do too well in the regular season. So I hope that does not come into effect with us.
Adam, are you from Oakland?
I am not from Oakland. I am from New York.
Okay, so would you? Well, why? Just briefly, why are you a Raiders fan?
I never really had a good answer for that. loved Bo Jackson as a kid. Was drawn to that the silver and black. Mystique,
that's a good answer.
You know, are you a Royals fan also in baseball?
I am not. Just the Raiders. Everybody else, New York.
Would you be impacted? And you know, this is an interesting question. I'm a Vikings fan. I haven't lived in Minnesota full time since 1997, but I would be heartbroken. I can't even begin to describe how upset I would be if the team ever left, even if they moved to my backyard. so would you be impacted one way or another? But also, the Raiders have a record of having moved to LA and back to Oakland. So would you care at all if the Raiders left Oakland?
I mean, this team belongs in Oakland, but unfortunately, Oakland is not the...
But you're still a fan of the Las Vegas Raiders, though?
I'll still be a fan of the Las Vegas Raiders, yes.
Okay.
Not a problem.
All right, David, what do you hate the most about this Chargers team? Other than the fact that they may not be there for long.
Just injuries and the inconsistency of the offensive line last year. I mean, it scares the hell out of me. I really don't want to see another year with them throwing 24 different bodies out there to try and protect our franchise quarterback. That's going to drive me crazy. They better stay healthy this year. And if they do, I see big things. But, Joey Bosa and the Chargers need to get in a room and figure this out, sign that contract, and get this kid into camp.
All right, Travis, we'll end with you. We'll give you the last word. Defending Super Bowl champions, probably not too much to find to dislike about a team that just won the Super Bowl, but tell us if there's anything about the 2016 Broncos.
Yeah, I think the only thing is much like other teams, it's the uncertainty of the offensive line and as well tight end. We've put a lot of focus on defense. We've put a lot of focus, you know, Paxton Lynch is our future, but we really also need to shore up the offensive line. So that's really the only hole that needs to be filled for the Broncos.
Let me just see one more time, just because we didn't get any consensus on anything other than the Broncos having the best defense. Does everybody agree the Raiders have the best offensive line in this division, or does anybody disagree on that one?
100%.
All right.
I agree.
These other teams all seem like...
You'd be crazy not to say that.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Okay. So thank you so much, guys, for joining us. Travis, you can be found on Twitter at Travis Henry, just how you spell it, just like the former running back, or at Unleash or RockyRow.com. Cole, you're at Jayhawk Cole. Is that correct?
Correct. I miss Ben Heaney.
Okay, Adam. Adam, are you a Twitter guy?
I love Ben Haney. No, no Twitter handle for me. I'm just a fan. Not going to plug anything for me.
All right, and David, as we said, you're the co-host of the Chargers Domination Podcast. You can get that at sandiegosportsdomination.com, or you can hit David up at DHSD619. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to all your teams this year. May I see one of you in the Super Bowl in February, but that's obviously not going to happen.
Hey, go Vikes. I'm a Vike.
Yeah, hey.
Teddy Bridgewater forever.
I thought I would see the Broncos in the Super Bowl after the 1998 season, and that did not happen. So I'm no longer expecting.
That was a choke job.
Let me ask you a question. How is Adrian Peterson going to do this year?
Oh, I hate Adrian Peterson. I wish they would cut him. So I said that on the NFC North podcast. I think the Vikings offense is better when Peterson doesn't. Peterson's value, and obviously, Adam, you saw this last year, like in the second half of the Raiders game, when the Vikings are beating a team by 10 in the fourth quarter, Peterson will pull off an 80-yard touchdown and turn it into a blowout. That's his. Actually, he also did that actually against the Broncos last year, Travis. He to tie the game in a fourth quarter. We pulled up a 50-yard touchdown. Yep. So he does have value sometimes. But his biggest value is really
it's pretty good value.
Yeah. But the problem is that Teddy Bridgewater is so much better when he's not on the field because Peterson can't pass block and he can't catch the ball out of the backfield. He can't play out of the shotgun, and that's really Teddy's strength. So yeah. I think the offense usually does better when he's not on the field, honestly, which is sort of a similar thing we saw with Seattle last year, where Marshawn Lynch injury really allowed Russell Wilson to take the next step in his career. So
would you prefer if Norv tailored the offense to Bridgewater as opposed to Peterson?
I think the future of this offense. Look, obviously.
Obviously, the future. Similar
to the Broncos, this team is going to go as far as the defense can take them. But anyway, it's a zero-sum game. It's the $15 million they invested in Peterson that could go somewhere. And that's the same thing with, like, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's going to have a great season for the Cowboys this year, but do they have to waste a pick that high on him when we see that they plug anybody in? You know, right, they plugged in Darren McFadden, and he was, what, fourth in the league in rushing last year, something like that? DeMarco Murray, the year before that, was first in the league and then went to Philly to nothing. I just think that if a team has a good offense, they can do it with any running back, and they could use that money elsewhere. But and also, the biggest thing is I hate rooting for a guy who's, you know, such a unrepentant child abuser. You know, every other guy who's gotten in trouble, like Mike Vick or Ray Rice, like they go so overboard to try and make up for it. And Peterson never did that. And fans still wear his jersey and he gets away with it. So anyway, but this is not a Vikings podcast. That Keith would be rolling his eyes and trying to cut us off. Hey, you guys asked me. Anyway, don't worry. The Vikings will find a terrible way to lose in the playoffs well before they have an opportunity.
So, So I have a, Vikes fans are very, very loyal. And we have some Minnesota people. My neighbor across the street is my really good friend. He's a Vikings fan. So I pseudo became a Vikings fan just because, you know, it was NFC and we started watching games together. And I would just watch these heartbreaking losses. And he's like, this is exactly what it's like to be a Vikings fan. And I feel for you. So.
Yeah, well, that game against the Broncos last year, where Teddy they were driving to get it, and then, you know, whatever, they're playing in Denver.
Yeah.
They're not really expecting a win there. But then they played in Arizona in December on a Thursday night on 3 days rest with their three best defensive players missing. They had got blown out the week before at home against Seattle. Nobody was expecting anything. And the same thing happened. This time was even worse because they were already in field goal range, and Teddy dropped back to throw a game-winning touchdown when they could have just kicked the field goal in overtime. And strip sack to the same thing that happened against the Broncos. Another
let's not
loss.
Forget the playoff game again.
Yeah. To be fair, there's no such thing as field goal range when your kicker can't hit a 20-yard field goal.
That's football for you.
Yep. All right, so guys, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to all your teams, and you know, we may have you back depending on how the season goes for the various teams in the NFC West this year. So thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Well, have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.